Yeah. Oof. We're just doing an intro. That's all we're doing
here. What are we doing intro for?
Well, last show I had this lady, Carrie Cassidy, on, and she was talking about the secret space program. She was talking about CIA mind control, time travel, you know, the fact that the CIA funds ISIS, and then we go out and we do, like, this canned hunt, which we call, you know, getting the terrorists. But really, it's kind of like just shooting deer that are eaten out of a feeder in a high fence operation. You know what I mean? They want to control the variables on their fucking bullshit military exercise, you know? So anyway, I interviewed Carrie Cassidy. Explosive information. I'm not sure how, you know, we also get into a lot of alien territory. I'm not sure what's the deal with that, but... you know, some, this is a funny podcast sometimes, you know? So I just want to debrief the people. I know out there you look like, it changes it up. Well, I'm hearing comics, I'm hearing crazy people. That's what I'm bringing you. And I want to say this, we're bringing other people. This guy called Alfred Weber, who claims that he wrote a book about life on Mars. The CIA time traveled it back to him before he wrote it. You know what I mean? That's helpful. Because the sources in the back of the book haven't even been written yet. Unbelievable. Another guy who's time traveled, he met Washington. He time traveled with Obama. His name is Andrew DiBisciago. So they're going to be on the podcast in the first and second week of January.
Where did he and Obama time travel to? And why?
To Mars. They time travel back in time. It's a whole thing. Let me tell you the... Magic, the gathering situation I walked in on. This guy invites me over. We're getting to be friends, you know, and then he thinks he could just drop me in the middle of a Magic the Gathering thing and watch him play cards for 3 hours.
I told you to join and play cards as well.
That's not the kind of friendship we have. You can't just falsely advertise one situation and drop me in the middle of Magic the Gathering. You know what I mean?
That is precisely what I did.
I didn't know that was going to happen.
Neither did I. I just found some people playing Magic the Gathering. I was like, well, this looks cool. Let's hang out here.
I think that you might know... Like, Magic the Gathering is more complicated than more religions. You know what I mean? Like, you have all these shield points. Unless you're, like, a high-level Catholic, like, exorcist, you don't have to know all this, like, what, like, sage burn for certain spirits. You know what I mean? You're Magic right. the Gathering has a lot of rules. It's very complicated. A lot of preachers just, you know, say whatever bullshit's on the teleprompter, but they're not really, like, they don't have to learn all this shit, you know?
Yeah, these guys know this game in depth. Like, their friends will say, I'm playing, and they'll name some obscure card, and the other guys straight away know what it is. There's no, like, oh, what does that do? It's like, oh, okay, you're doing this. Is it fucking, yeah.
How many cards have different, like, shield points? Like, you might have one card, and then it can have, like, six different attacks.
They all have, like, special abilities and things. They all know all these special abilities do. And they all have, like, decks built around certain things. One guy's a deck that's all about elves or all about, like, right. giant worms or fucking...
So each of the decks also has its own, its own religion. Like, all the different fractals, you can... Oh, I know how to play Magic the Gathering. I'm really good with dwarves. Well, you don't know shit, motherfucker. You play this elf deck. You play this worm deck. You know? I got some black magic.
Yeah. So. Very fucking complicated. My friend used to always say the subculture's a fractal. And that if you look into something deeply enough, you'll find intricacy and complexity in art. I had a friend who, she's got black, and she has black hair. So she would go into these subreddits and forums where they talk about black hair in such minute fucking detail. These tiny things about how to get the right curl in your 1-inch hair. And so I thought everything was like that. And then I had an argument with my friend about the kazoo. Because I was convinced that you couldn't master the kazoo in a month. And she was like, yeah, you could do it in like a day. And we started researching into it. And there's no like, you know what kazoo is?
Yeah.
We like hum into it. We looked into it, and we couldn't find any master kazoo players. We couldn't find like a world kazoo championship or anything like that. So it was, I may have been wrong. It may not be that everything is fractal. It might be that kazoo is one of the things that is just easy to do.
Well, also, if you look into any subculture that's made up of people, you look in the brain of any person. They all have different things. You look into all the different things they like. they don't like guitar playing 100%. They might be very good at guitar playing and only like it 70%. So every person, every brain, every molecule, every decision is a different fractal of something. And then you look at like the multiverse theories and all this stuff about like quantum engineering, quantum mechanics, that every single firing, every single synapse in your brain is its own universe and all this stuff, and material goes in and out between universes at like a harmonic rate, you know? And it's like, you know, you think about every decision you make and how that changes the possibility, and you know what I mean?
You should read this great book called Power Versus Force by Dr. David R. Hawkins. It's a fantastic book. It's like a mix of... So he talks about quantum mechanics and cutting-edge science stuff, but really it's like a book about spirituality, about like one's internal journey.
Oh, but what I do... I was an atheist for a while, and then I, you know, started doing drugs and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that tends to get rid of atheism in one way or another, doesn't it? It's nice.
Mm.
Spirituality is where it's at. Hippies.
Oh, but I mean to tell you, your episode got a lot of hits, you know?
Wonderful.
When you were on my podcast, there was a lot of feedback. I could look at the Google. You know, you opened up the UK market for me, that's for sure. I started looking at the Google map, and all of a sudden, your peeps were representing. So thank you for listening in England, Australia. We got some people in Germany that are listening.
Really?
It's pretty great.
Fantastic.
Australia, because in New Zealand, I had this guy, Vinny Eastwood, on my show a little bit back. He's from New Zealand. You know what I mean? So we're a network of people trying to figure out what the fuck's going on right now. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We're all on something, whether it's prescription. Everyone's using a substance. Sugar. Being on the phone, yelling at your aunt, whatever you're addicted to.
Fluoride in our water.
Yeah.
Chemicals they put in our meat. And I think I'm going to become pescatarian.
What's that one?
Like vegetarian, but you eat fish.
Yeah, but then you got, you know, the Fukushima situation, basically poisoning the entire Pacific, if you listen to some people.
Really? How? Why?
Well, all the radiation, homie. And then if you, the Gulf of Mexico, that's got fucked already because of the fucking oil spill.
Yeah,
and then they poured a lot of dispersant, and dispersant just breaks down the oil in fish's brains. So it just, like, disperses oil, right? And so fish are made of oil. You take fish oil, that's good for you, but they pour dispersant to clean up the oil spill, which just breaks up the oil. So the fish can't, you know what I mean? So that's how fucked that is.
Fall apart.
And then, you know.
Sucks.
It's not like the ocean's totally connected. Oh, wait, it is. So, like, every, you know what I mean? Like, some people that are up there are, like, fucking crazy. Especially when you realize, I say this every day, but there's, you know, alternate technologies. We don't have to be burning up dinosaur fucking brains in our fucking gasoline tanks, okay? I smell shenanigans. And whether it's an alien or some weird guy playing fucking Power Dungeons and Dragons or fucking Game of Thrones or with dick pic blackmail with the NSA or whatever.
That's quite like, nice though, actually.
Huh?
Like, it's like a Game of Thrones. Maybe in the future somebody will write a book that'll make a hologram video about the weird times back at the start of the 21st century. Yeah, it could be like Game of Thrones. That's quite a nice thought.
But if you look at House of Cards, you know, that's modern day Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
same
right.
Shit.
Yeah.
Same shit. Yeah, they're not fucking in front of their dead nephew's body. But aren't they? I mean, what is like fucking drone murder? You know what I mean? Compared to any of that shit. So fucking... all shit is fucked, dude.
Yeah.
What would your... if you were president... of our country, easy. You've come over here, or ambassador, you know, whatever. You've been an exchange student.
Uh-huh.
And you're Iranian via UK. Now you're here in New Orleans. If you were president of this country, how would you clean things up?
How would I... that's a big question. I don't know. Find out which people in Parliament were trustworthy. Not Parliament, whatever you call it here. Senate and...
Congress?
You know? Yeah. Find, like, if I'd suddenly become the most powerful man in the world, I could try and make changes, but unless I had people on my side, then I get fucked over, like Obama has, right? They keep stopping him from passing any fucking things. So it'd have to be a power game, right? Work out which people you could trust and which you couldn't. Like, be very nice and friendly to them, like handshake and, you know. And then suddenly, when you know who's on your team and who isn't, just
yeah,
like that.
What if you pick up
the whole thing?
What if you pick a crack cabinet, right? And they start getting mind controlled one by one by dark projects in the CIA.
Well, then we'd have to try and do something about the CIA, but I wouldn't know what to do. I don't think I'd be able to do anything. I don't think I'd make a very good president. I don't, you know, fucking, I don't know. I try and incite people to rebellion. Yeah, okay, if I was president and there was a big fucking, like, conspiracy going on and all my people were getting mind controlled, I would just try and piss the people off enough to get them to rebel.
You would rile up, you would have, like, a truth and reconciliation committee?
I don't know. We could try and just tell people the truth. I could just go on the news and say, like, dudes, this is how it is. But right. That might not work. They might not listen. I might get stopped. So it might be my only option is to just be a dickhead, right? Be the villain that we all need. Get them to vilify me and fucking rebel and fight the power. And they'll come in, they'll break into the White House, and they'll see me sat on a throne going, what's up, bitches? Pissing them off just enough so that they kill me.
And have the balls to set up a new government.
Yes.
Wow.
It'd never work.
You would scapegoat yourself.
No, preferably not. But that's an option, you know.
It's on the table.
Yeah.
Option A, be a good president. Option, everything's fucked, pull the switch. Is that one? Well, we got a good vibe going on here, you know. We're just transitioning. Oh, the person who's on the podcast today, her name is Betty Boo.
Betty Boo.
She is a great comic in New Orleans, you know. It says on her Facebook that she graduated the School of Hard Knocks with a fucking master's or PhD. She got a PhD in street smarts, you know?
That's a pretty useful PhD, to be honest.
So, she's going to be laying it down for us. You know, I see her at all the clubs every time I go out to do stand-up. I see this lady, so. Betty Boo, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I got an interesting comment from one of the hosts of these rooms that said, and this has been always at times that I felt just the opposite, which was really funny. He said, you seem a little scripted. And I'm thinking, I was completely balls out nervous.
Right.
Wow. I must have made that look better than I thought. Right. You know, and I don't get a chance to view myself. I hear myself occasionally record stuff and whatever. But so I don't have any real idea of what my impact is until I get off the stage and somebody tells me, because I'm so fraught with stage fright, whether it shows or not, you know? It's just like, I call it the blind tunnel of terror. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're just, okay, tap dance faster until it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and then, okay, go piss yourself or have a panic attack when you're done. You know, but not now. You have to, you know, 3 minutes or whatever, you've got to do it.
This is Highway Diary. I'm sitting here with Betty Boo. You know, she's explaining what it's like to emotionally be a comic. I remember last night I got off at Siberia, and you know what somebody heckled at me?
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to leave you with that. I didn't get the light, but John Miller knows what's going on. Some comics.
All right, man. Good try.
They go, good try. And it was like, there was a smattering. I just didn't connect. I've done good at Siberia before, but it's just like last night, it just, I was trying some new stuff and nothing was working. These, you know, really judgmental goth hipsters are staring at you. You know what I mean? They don't even look up from their phones and you're bombing and you're like, fuck, man, what is my life right now? You know, like, you just start getting, you get depressed. And I'm listening to it back on the bus ride back. I'm listening. And I'm going, that's everything I wanted to do. That's how I wanted to do it, but people thought it sucked.
Sometimes it's the room. Sometimes it just is.
I just blame myself every time, no matter what, by default.
Well, you know, whatever you may or may not have to do with it, but there are times when you just don't connect with your audience. It's just well, whatever the reason is, and you'll find that other comedians are having that same night. And this is when I say, yeah, you know what? Sometimes it's just a damn crowd. It's, you know, it can be difficult. And Siberia is a difficult room. I don't. I work hard to hold that room. That's how I feel about it.
I like the stage picture. You're smoking, you're walking around, you're pissed off, you're taking puffs of smoke. You're talking about shoving your vibrator up your ass, and you know what I mean? It's fucking great.
Well, not quite that far, but yes, yes. Just my relationship with my vibrator.
Well, listen, I don't want to imply the depth of your
vibrator. I have
vibrator.
To really love you to do that. I'm not sure I love my vibrator that much.
But it adds to your whole character, you know what I mean? Like smoking and stuff like this. You went to the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I think that I'm one of those people that fell through the cracks in life.
What do you mean?
I didn't complete my education, and I am a lot smarter than I test, necessarily. Let's say it this way. In Europe, I would have been fine. I would have been shuttled into whatever profession I belonged in. How sad is it that 20 years later you go back to take a GED test and the only thing that you fail in at 20 points is math?
I'm doing wonderful.
20 years later, for math we never took.
Right.
And everything else is in the upper percentile and it won't average out. It's like, I wouldn't have had to know that much to graduate high school. How ironic is that? It's bizarre. And I gotten to a point where I really was like letting that define me for a while, but.
What can I get you guys to drink?
I feel like I've learned from experience in life from being, from trying on so many different hats in life's hat store. It's, what have you been? What haven't you been? What are you doing now? What am I not doing? It's, I'm all over the place. So I'm learning on a regular basis about a lot of different things without having to have a formal education. Although at one point I'd like to be able to do that. Just to say, yes, I did. And here's the piece of paper. It's
water cap
for $3.
It's better to be where I am right now in the terms of how I can view myself and how other people are viewing me and have a sense of humor about that.
Right.
And be able to say, ha, yeah, I guess that wasn't quite what you were expecting. When I do karaoke, especially because I have my certain little look that I have, someone hearing me sing for the first time, they just blown completely out of the water, have no idea. And I think, yeah, this is it. This is what I want. That's something I did in my life.
I knew how to do that because I had to wear that hat for a while.
It's being able to peel away something and say, there's more here than you think. There's more than you know. I went through a lot with feeling as if I was dismissed in my life, not taken very seriously in my life. And I've come to a place where you understand that you're not taking yourself very seriously. Who else is? With respect, it's a hard lesson to come to a place where I understand that if you don't have a lot of respect for yourself, I really shouldn't be in any position to expect respect from you. And so this is a good place to be, but a difficult place to be, because then you understand the meaning of don't take things so damn personally.
So did you... You were in a marriage.
Yes.
Right? You thought you had everything, the white picket fence, everything's good. Then is there, you realize that you're like in some kind of two-person cult with a patriarchy, and then all of a sudden things got rattled at their core. What happened?
Crack. Happened.
Whoa.
Yeah. Fun.
For who?
For him.
Yeah?
That person I would definitely would say was like the love of my life, and I did a 180 for him,
right,
and two children, and went from being the hippie gypsy to the West Bank of Louisiana and working at the fucking Piggly Wiggly's meat counter, you know, driving a freaking 1980 whatever Lincoln Continental back and forth, doing all kinds of crazy shit because of things you do for love. And I was happy to do it. But the deal was is that I'll put up with anything but crap.
Yeah.
And
you'll go to Piggly Wiggly's. in your shitty car.
I will wear a hairnet and slice hog's head fucking cheese for you and your children.
You start doing crack. That there's a.
We're done. And this was yeah. It was a 10 years of sobriety for that person.
Right.
And I said I will go to the ends of the earth for you, but if you ever do this again, we're done. And so the long and short on that was that he did start doing crack again, and I separated from him, and before I had a chance to divorce him, he died. So, for the last 10 years, I've been with him.
And so now you're getting redemption through stand-up.
Yeah, it was, stand-up comedy is something I should have done a long time ago, but I didn't have enough belief in myself. I didn't have enough self-confidence. Stage fright. Crippling stage fright. And that's been a really hard thing to work through for myself. So
that's funny because I never got that from your act. So you say that. I've never thought that about you.
It's gotten so much better.
How long have you been doing it?
It'll be 4 years in April.
Oh, okay. So you're starting to, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more. But with anything new that I do, a lot. Like, my hands are sweating just sitting here talking about that kind of anxiety. I'm thinking about the performance I'm going to be doing tomorrow night.
Yeah.
It's going to be off the cuff, on the fly, first time out of the box, and make it work type stuff. And it's going to be...
Yeah.
You know, but I'll do it. And that's the thing is the power I have now with my own self to be able to say,
So, Betty, we were talking earlier about how you, had a divorce and stuff, Hard Knocks. What was it that, like, clicked your mind where you were like, this is what I want to do? How did you come to stand up? You know what I mean? What was the first spark that made you decide to do it?
Extreme frustration and boredom. The frustration with people telling me for years, I can't believe that you're not a comedian. I can't believe you're not on stage or in films. Da da da. And me being so incredibly bored with my life at that point, and thinking to myself, something's got to give. I want to be able to find out whether or not I'm funny to anybody other than my friends.
Right.
Yeah. It's like this voice has been in my head for a long time, and I'm like, you should do that.
Can I ask
you? Fighting myself. You
know? How long after the divorce was it?
It wasn't a divorce. He died.
Oh, yeah. How long after he died was it? After he died from crack, right?
Complications from a car wreck, yeah, that were all related to drug use.
Right.
So how long did I start doing comedy?
Yeah, from that moment, how long was it?
From that moment, it was about 6 years. Yeah.
6 years?
And I started doing comedic karaoke, which was ultimately my gateway into comedy. And gave
so
me.
Were you, like, going through, like, a spiral at that point, like, for 6 years? Did you, like, what was the, you know what I mean? What happened in that 6 years?
Oh, yeah, and that time, it was... 3 or 4 years of just not really permanently having a home base, of feeling like I didn't want to commit to anything or anybody ever much, moving around, went to Europe for the first time, which was awesome, moved to California for a short time, also awesome.
Where in California?
Southern California, San Diego and San Ysidro, actually. So, in the sense of being a positive galvanizing effect, what I was able to take away from my life basically being destroyed and starting over again with nothing was a lot of adventure, a lot of feeling of, hey, what's stopping you now? The world is yours. You have nothing and no one to be beholden to or obligated, you know?
Right.
No strings, no ties. Yeah. So, in that regard...
Yeah, sure.
Is that me?
Oh, who's this? The host of the show?
Wait,
it's me on Blender.
That's okay.
So, we were talking about the fact that...
Yeah, so were you moving around, like, always, like, just, like, moving to town, like, did you have connections in San Diego? How did you, when you went there? Cool, man.
Yeah, you know what they say is you never find out who really loves you until some shit goes down.
Who'd you stay with?
I was fortunate enough to stay with an older, wonderful friend of mine who basically moved me into her mobile, like an RV trailer park sort of. Yeah, it was insane. Two-person situation in a one-person at best meant for a family vacation type bus. It was insane. I lived in the garden room, as we called it for a moment. Which is what some plastic attached on made a little room.
Jesus. Yeah. So it was like a greenhouse because you didn't have a roof? And this was in San Diego? So were
in
they living?
San Diego, I could see the lights of Tijuana.
Were you guys like squatting in this place?
Oh, certainly not, no. It's a very expensive RV park, actually.
Okay.
But she was living there alone, and of course it's perfectly fine for one person.
Right.
But when you put two people in it, it's a whole other situation. So, yeah. Cramped at best. So I was very lucky. I had people literally in different parts of the United States and in Holland saying, please come to us. Come stay with us. We love you. We want you to, you know, to be happy with us for a little bit, you know. Basically, I was displaced. People asked me if I was affected by Katrina. I said no, I had my own national tragedy the year before, thanks.
Right.
So, you know, I literally, my husband died in the end of September, and I was in Holland for November, middle of November at the latest, stayed for months, came back, went to California, was briefly right outside of Los Angeles for a moment, then went to my friend in San Ysidro, and then finally moved back here to New Orleans again. So that was a really good thing to be able to return home on my own terms type thing. Yeah.
So you were a couple here. This is what where your home base was. Gotcha. So then what did you, you know, were you left, you know, what do you do for a living to keep yourself going?
I describe myself as the ADD of creativity. I have been a professional psychic for the last 21 years, which I love very well and am blessed to be able to do. And that really has provided me with a decent income, although a very variable income. And then I'm also an artist, and I am a face painter.
Where are you a psychic at?
Jackson Square.
Oh, really?
We have private appointments and all sorts of other things.
Wow.
So, and then I'm a face painter, I'm a burlesque dancer, and a comedian. Yay for me.
You're quite a vagabond. What kind of magic are you riding with? You know, there's some dark forces, there's some voodoo, like there's a lot of types, there's a lot of flavors of magic, you know?
Yep, not riding any of those trains. Ride my own fucking train. Seriously, refuse to be arrogant enough to know the name or face of God. It's the big voice and the little voice. And you're either doing the right light thing or you're not. And the rest of it's pretty much a bunch of bullshit and blah, blah, blah.
So what do you
I don't really answer to any of those entities or deities or however you want to look at that. I'm just here doing the thing. And I always know if I'm on my right pathway. And if that's the case, then great. Because I don't have to be caught up in largely egocentric, dogmatic exercises and mental masturbation that end up preventing spiritual growth and facilitating nothing.
Where's the psychic part come into it?
You know what? I wish I knew. I describe myself as a psychometrist, which is essentially energy reading. And so whether I'm holding the cards or holding your hand or your dead grandmother's watch or whatever's going on, I believe that what I do is largely an undefined and unexplained science. It's simply a matter of being able to read energy. Everyone does this on some level, to what degree, or with what accuracy or talent, maybe another thing. But yeah, you know, I try not to make a big deal out of it. I feel like this is a tool that everyone has and that you are able to develop if you wish. You can use it for good or you can use it for ill, for whatever you want. That's on you. But yeah, my whole point is that I want to be able to feel
really good about what I do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, whether that's going to be the comedy or the psychic thing or painting little kids' faces or whatever's going to go on. I believe that you can take very firmly and clearly the idea that whatever I do to you,
do I
for
what?
You, with you, I'm doing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't like the idea of somebody coming up and piercing my nose without my permission, perhaps I really shouldn't do that. It's the whole Jesus do unto others things. It's a very delicate balance, karmically speaking, with energy and other people's energy and intentions and will. And why would you harm yourself by putting ill into the world, trying to harm someone else or alter their will? Or yeah,
so you just kind of get a read on the situation and then kind of act as a spiritual arbiter, knowing how karma works, knowing what's going to come back on them, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, we take a look at the situation, and I tell them what I see, and we just discuss the different options that are available.
Right.
And I am very quick to tell people, if it wouldn't be okay for you to catch your man cheating, then I guess you shouldn't probably be talking about cheating on your man. Don't hurt yourself. Don't harm yourself, right? And I can't tell you, oh, do-do-do, and option C is clearly, this is your life coming back to you from an objective stranger. How the fuck do I know that? Who knows? Who cares? Is it working? Is it relevant? That's the important part. And then here is your information to do with as you will. Right?
How did you first start to understand your spiritual gifts?
They frightened and confused me for many, many years.
Like you would be intuitive about something and be like, oh, how did I know that?
Exactly.
Can you give me an example of some of those things?
The worst examples, the scariest and most clear examples were knowing in my family the last time that I would see someone, knowing that they were going to die, knowing that I would never see their faces again, that kind of a thing. Very, very difficult. Yeah.
For your husband, I would imagine, but was it also for your parents?
For my mother, absolutely. For my father, yes. For my husband, yes and no. I knew on a level maybe that I didn't want to accept that person should have died upon impact, lived, and then died of neglect in a nursing home months later. So it was a very confusing and, of course, emotionally fraught and turbulent time. Yeah. I think it was hard for me to... Here's the thing. I can see for you, but I can't see for me. There's no objectivity. I can't read my own cards. It's an exercise in frustration and futility. I don't have the necessary removal that is necessary to be able to say what you see without filtering it or biasing it or altering it in some way.
So how did that, comedy is also, like, it takes so much time, it takes so much patience and stuff. Like, you know, where did the, did you, like, see in the stars for yourself at all that, like, comedy was your thing? It was just everybody out telling you that you should do it?
I've been an entertainer since I was a child. Had I had a different kind of childhood, I'm sure that maybe I would have been some, E-train wreck Hollywood Celebrity Report, you know what I mean? But it wasn't that kind of a childhood. And I'm a child of alcoholism. I'm a child of emotional abuse and all that kind of good stuff, you know. So all of that took a big toll. And
so you need attention and approval. That's what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm doing it.
Absolutely. Comedy has been nothing but a way to be able to have free therapy that's not on a couch. Standing up instead of lying down, right?
And also, if you turn your shit, if you do the alchemy of turning your pain into something that's funny, then you have healed yourself by taking your shit that sucks and making it funny for other people and lifting other people.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, you've got a couple of different ways to go. I'm running on a regular part. All of my life is equal parts, anger and humor. It's, you know, you can run around being angry all the time. How far will that get you? Get through your 20s and find out. It's a lot easier to make people laugh. My job taught me that with the psychic work, that having to talk about difficult things with people without alienating them, and using my sense of humor with that, and being able to impart these things and then be able to feel better about them. So, yes, the healing process.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Really important. And I've always known that I needed to do something like this. I just desperately wanted to hide for a large part of my life, I think, and be quote unquote normal. And
it just came back, the showbiz buzz. You can't get away from it.
All of it, yeah. You know, it's like sometimes the harder you try to blend in, the more you stand out. And it didn't matter what I did or didn't do. I've never been the same or fit in with most kinds of people, or I'm not a conventional woman, you know, all those kinds of things. And so finally, at some point, you just maybe you make up your mind to be okay with being you and saying, fuck it, here I am, and life's too short, right? Yeah.
I got a lot of, like, social anxiety, like, new people I'm really worried about, I'm paranoid about everybody, you know what I mean? But then, like, on the stage, it's like, okay, it's my time to talk. It's like almost like you're like struggling. You feel like you're not heard or something like that. You know what I mean? I think that's the impetus for why everybody does it.
It's a great way to be able to say, hey, yeah. And the idea that you can hold someone with your story, right, and make them want to listen. Make them want you to do a couple more minutes or to see another show, right? Yeah.
What do you think about the politically correct movement that wants to say about, like, oh, you can't do rape jokes, you can't do this kind of jokes? Those are my trigger words. You're using my trigger words, don't you know? What do you think about that?
Freedom of speech. I don't like the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
I don't like anti-Semitic people, but I don't have the audacity to say that you don't have a right to what you believe in. I'm sure lots of those people don't like me, and that's why we live in America, so that we can practice the important part of our culture known as freedom of speech, which is one of the things that makes us, for all the fucked up things we are, one of the better places in the world to live, right? I don't like hearing 10 rape jokes a night. I'm working on a new rape joke myself. Would you like to hear?
Sure.
How many rape jokes does it take before you stop telling rape jokes?
How many?
Get raped and find out.
So, yeah, I see both sides of this issue. You know, that some people say it's promoting rape culture. Some people say this and that. I feel like here's the thing. Some people think that, like, their shit is, like, the most shit. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, people get back from Iraq. Am I not allowed to talk about the Iraq war because people have PTSD? You know, like, everyone thinks that their shit's the biggest, most important shit, you know? And it's like, we all got shit, and you gotta, like, deal with these issues deeply in order to... Now, I'm not a woman. I'm not, you know what I mean? I try to suppress things. I'm very good at suppressing my emotions, you know what I mean? I guess the women feel it more and stuff. Maybe they're more emotionally intelligent. But I'm just like, look, we all got shit. How we talk about it in real terms is by not censoring comedy. You know, we're the street, you know, philosophers. We got our eye on the ground. We're struggling. We're trying to make something happen for ourselves. And to say to those people, hey, you can't use these magic words. I don't know. It's like,
it's not okay. It's not okay to do that at all, because the entertainment industry, the comedians, the jokesters, the pranksters, all of these people, it's the way that I feel about well-done animation. It's allowed to approach a subject in a way that wouldn't otherwise be socially acceptable, that wouldn't otherwise perhaps command the attention of a certain kind of people to make them more aware. You hate that so much? Well, then great, do something positive about it and stop bitching. And the politically correct thing, I said, so if I say I'm a short, fat, white bitch. How many people have I offended yet? I identify with all of those things.
Right, right.
If you said that to me, I'd ask you where you got your master's in the overstatement of the obvious, you motherfucker. Do you know? Are you going to tell me I can't say motherfucker? No.
Right.
Here's what I want to say. It's your job in life as a human being, once you pull your head out of your ass and realize that there are other people in the world besides you, to find a way to talk about things with people that doesn't alienate them completely. You can make them uncomfortable. You can make them cry. You can make them laugh. You can make them get up and dance and sing. But don't run them out of the room. Try not to tell a 10-minute shit joke when people are eating.
I struggle with that.
Try really hard in a room full of women not to talk about vaginas in such a disgusting way that literally women get up and leave in the middle of the set or as soon as it's over. You might want to think about how to include these women.
Are you talking about my act right now?
Certainly not.
I thought you were. I was like, yeah, that's good advice. I do all those things.
Tonight, and you should be able to talk about whatever you want, whether I like it, or you like it, or whoever likes it. That's just the way that it is. This is America. This is why we do what we do. We want to be able to explore dangerous, frightening, painful things and make them better. What would you rather do? Sit around and laugh, or sit around and cry and scream? I do enough crying and screaming. I want to spend as much of my time laughing as I possibly can.
That's true. It's
especially
like
about the shit that makes me want to cry and scream.
So I guess we just got to tread lightly and know what we're doing when we're breaking the rules of decency.
Tread carefully. Carefully.
Yeah. That's the art of it. You know, you also got to make it funny and entertain everybody. Not be an asshole.
Be an asshole. But be an asshole that somebody wants to see again. Be an asshole that has something to back that up with.
It's got some documents, you know?
Are you a documented asshole? Because even though I really want to smack you, I want to come back and see you next week. There, now you're an asshole with documentation.
Right. You're making them think about shit a bit outside their comfort zone. That's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. I think that it's very, very important to be able to communicate clearly and freely. And this is 90% of the problems that we have as human beings, individually, in small relationships and large relationships, is a lack of clear and proper, healthy communication about things. And humor is one of the ways that we are able to break through things.
You want to plug your burlesque show? When are you going to next do this? I'm going to post this, by the way, tomorrow morning.
Okay. I have actually done burlesque several times, and I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night at Siberia. It's a free show between 6 and 9, the Billion Dollar Baby Doll Burlesque,
yeah,
with the Reverend Spooky Lestrange, and me, Betty Boo, doing two burlesque numbers, and a comedy set as well. We so look forward to seeing everybody there, 6 to 9, Siberia. Wednesday night,
yeah.
That's tomorrow, guys.
That's Wednesday, the 17th of December.
Yes.
So we're talking about right fucking now. I don't know if you have plans, if you got a burrito in your fucking hand, you got to drop that shit. You got to start heading over to Siberia. Betty Boo is lighting her tits on fire, doing some burlesque. You're going to see those honkers, you know what I mean? And they're beautiful. They're glorious. And
they cannot be contained.
I'm just stalling for this podcast so I could be near them longer. You know
And I'm not even wearing anything low cut tonight. Just a short thing.
Wow.
Nothing to drop tonight unless somebody else is going to bend over and pick that up.
It's like being around them. They make me feel happy.
Hey.
Okay, any final thoughts for the people? This has been episode 99 of Highway Diary Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Hollibug. With me, Betty Boo, National Treasure.
Aww.
Get it here. All right. Take, what do you
New
want?
Orleans, the last North American refuge of the wild, wild bohemians. Party on, freedom of speech, do as you will, and have a lovely time.
Go fuck your neighbor, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it.
Everyone should get fucked. I don't know what the hell the deal is.
On a regular basis.
Yeah. Okay, bye.